past the Panig massacre, the Israeli occupation forces committed in the Nusrati Fijji camp are still resonating baefully and tragically against the Palestinian people here. Whereas, as you know, the Israeli forces have butchered at least 25 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, after the Israeli warplanes destroyed an entire residential square in the northern part of the Nusrati Fijji camp. The vast majority of the Palestinian victims were from women and children. Their dead bodies were found completely dismembered and, as you know, shredded into small pieces. In addition to that, we have witnessed a massive destruction and colossal devastation in the entire area, revealing how catastrophic and brutal the attack was against the Palestinian people. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes carried out several air raids against the eastern part of Al-Maghazi refugee camp in the middle area of Gaza Strip. When it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli warplanes also carried on their brutal attacks against various gatherings of the Palestinian people in different parts of Gaza City. The first one took place in As-Sana'a Street when the Israeli fighter drones attacked a gathering of the Palestinian people there, killing 3 Palestinian civilians. And previously, 2 Palestinian civilians were reportedly and confirmed killed after they were attacked in the vicinity of Ahmad Shawki School in Ar-Rimal neighborhood in the central area of Gaza City. Needless to mention that the southern part of Gaza City is still subjected to more cruel and vehement attacks of the Israeli artillery shelling, while the Israeli tanks continue to shoot at the Palestinian residential buildings in As-Sabra and Tal el-Hawa neighborhoods, respectively. And moving to the northern part of Gaza Strip, more than 35 Palestinian civilians have been reportedly killed for the past 24 hours as a result of the constant attacks carried out by the Israeli occupation forces, particularly in Beit Lahia City, which is still the focal point of the ongoing genocidal attacks carried out left and center against the Palestinian people. As you know, Gamal Adwan Hospital is still suffering from the repetitive attacks carried out by the Israeli occupation forces. And as you know, the Israeli forces recently stormed into that hospital, and they have committed several crimes against the Palestinian medical staff and the Palestinian patients there, killing a lot of them. And as you know, the suffering of this hospital is still ongoing by the Israeli occupation forces. And even when it comes to the southern part of Gaza Strip, the Israeli occupation forces continue to unalive more Palestinian civilians. More Palestinian residential buildings were detonated and destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces in the north, in the western part of Rafah City, while the eastern part of the city is still witnessing more cruel and vehement attacks of the Israeli artillery shelling. So we are still witnessing more genocidal attacks being carried out day and night by the Israeli occupation forces, claiming the lives of more Palestinian women and children who are still suffering on the ground from the suffocating siege imposed by the Israeli occupation forces. And as you know, we are still witnessing how catastrophic the situation is for the Palestinian people, as they are still deprived of having any access to the basic and the indispensable humanitarian necessities they need in order to survive the unprecedented humanitarian situation that they are going through since the very beginning of this war till this moment. The most horrifying chapter of this situation is that this situation is worsening severely on a daily basis, and the Israeli occupation forces are still adamant with their policy of weaponizing those humanitarian necessities against the Palestinian people.
Thank you so much, Muti. I would like to ask you more questions, but hopefully later in our next connections. That was Muti Abu Mosaba, a correspondent from the city of Deir al-Bala. A Hamas official says international mediators have resumed negotiations with the Palestinian group and Israel over a ceasefire in Gaza. The official with Hamas's political bureau reportedly said efforts have been reactivated to end the genocide and free Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. Bassam Naim said a deal to end the 14-month Israeli genocide was hopefully within the reach. The new comments came after ceasefire negotiations were halted last month amid frustration over lack of progress in the talks. The United Nations has sounded the alarm over the increasing violations of the rights of Palestinian people at the hands of Israeli forces and settlers in the occupied West Bank. In a statement released on Saturday, the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reported increasing Israeli settler violence, forced displacement of local Palestinian communities, and the ongoing killings by Israeli forces. The office says the Israeli forces killed 5 Palestinians and wounded 27 others, including 7 children, in a matter of 7 days. Since October last year, around 300 Palestinian households, totaling around 1,800 people, have been displaced from Bedouin and herding communities. That is due to settler attacks and restrictions on accessing their land imposed by Israeli authorities. Israel continues to breach the ceasefire agreement with Lebanon's Hezbollah as it has carried out more aerial aggression against the Arab country. Israeli fighter jets struck an area near the Litani River in the Nabatia district. The town of Odessa in southern Lebanon was also targeted. The latest attacks have brought the total number of Israel's ceasefire violations to 155 since November the 27th, when the truce between Israel and Hezbollah took effect. The aggression against Lebanon since October last year has taken the lives of over 4,000 people. Lebanon's caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati is holding a meeting with his cabinet ministers and representatives of the country's army in the southern city of Tyre. The meeting comes on the backdrop of a ceasefire agreement with Israel and the regime's repeated violations of the truce. For more on the story, we are now joined by our correspondent, Mariam Saleh. Mariam, over to you. What are the latest?
Well, we are here at the Benoit Barakat, Lebanese army barracks in the ancient city of Tyre in South Lebanon. Of course, the ministers today chose to have their meeting in this area specifically for several reasons. The first is a symbolic support, actually, for the people of South Lebanon, as they said, in addition to the fact that this also shows political support for the Lebanese army in its stance and the beginning of its deployment of its soldiers. We're talking about tens of thousands of soldiers that are expected to arrive to South Lebanon and deploy all over the area, especially in the south of the Litani. The city of Tyre itself is one of the first cities that is right after in the south of the Litani River. We also, of course, see, as you mentioned, the continuous breaching of the ceasefire. We know that the caretaker prime minister, as well as the speaker of the parliament, through, of course, several means, they have issued so many complaints on the issue of the violation of the ceasefire, the continuous violation, in addition to the aerial attacks from the Israeli military. We're also looking at more detonation and destruction and even bulldozers that are being used in order to demolish houses all over the border towns, especially in the areas of Yarun, as well as Khayyam and areas in the surrounding, of course, in all of the border towns, basically. We're hearing on a daily basis, people are hearing the sounds of explosions, which is the result of detonation of houses and schools and mosques in the border towns. Of course, Lebanon has issued these complaints extensively to the various parties that are supposed to be overlooking the ceasefire. They have, as we know from sources, received guarantees from the United States saying that they will not tolerate any of these violations after the 60-day period is over. And before that 60-day period, they are expecting that not a single Israeli soldier remains on Lebanese territory. Of course, Hezbollah, for its part, has also said that it is scrutinizing the situation, looking very closely at the Israeli violations. We know that Hezbollah has already issued a warning and even launched one operation on the Ruwaisat Al-Alam post, which is in the occupied Shabab farms. We know that also the Hezbollah Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem has also clearly said that they are monitoring the situation. The resistance will remain also very cautious and on high alert when it comes to the Israeli atrocities that continued, of course, whether throughout the war and now during the time which is supposed to be a ceasefire, and that if these violations continue, then the resistance will have to act. But up until now, the resistance, Hezbollah, is really putting things in the hands of the political leadership in Lebanon in order to bring about perhaps a long-endured ceasefire after the very atrocious and aggressive war on Lebanon.
Thank you so much, Mariam. That was Mariam Saleh from the city of Tyre in Lebanon. The Syrian Defense Ministry has denied reports that the country's army has withdrawn from the western city of Homs. The ministry says the army is present in Homs and its countryside and is deployed on fixed and solid defensive lines. It added that the army has been reinforced with huge additional forces. Earlier, the Syrian army targeted the positions of the armed groups in the Talbisa region north of Homs. In another development, Syria's air defenses intercepted a drone attack over Homs. The army also said it struck the armed group's convoys and gatherings in the northern and southern Hama countryside. It said the attacks were carried out by artillery weapons and Syrian-Russian aircraft. The army added that dozens of militants were killed and wounded in the attacks, and several of their vehicles were destroyed. Now, thousands of protesters have marched through the streets of South Korea's capital calling for President Yoon Suk-yeol to resign over his botched martial law declaration. Protesters headed towards the country's National Assembly in Seoul, where voting is scheduled to take place on President Yoon's impeachment over his controversial measure. Police forces closed off the street leading to the area. A rival protest has also taken place in downtown Seoul, where thousands of President Yoon's supporters denounced the country's opposition party. Yoon declared martial law late on Tuesday before being forced into a U-turn after lawmakers voted to overturn the measure. He has since apologized and expressed his regret over enforcing the martial law. Clashes have broken out in the Greek capital as thousands of demonstrators took to the streets to commemorate the 16th anniversary of the fatal police shooting of a teenage student. Around 5,000 people participated in the annual march honoring the victim, who was 15 at the time. Protesters set garbage containers ablaze and clashed with riot police, who responded with tear gas to disperse the crowd. Authorities say more than 60 individuals were temporarily detained. Alexandros Grigoropoulos, a school student, was fatally shot by a police officer in 2008, sparking days of rioting. His death remains a rallying point for annual demonstrations by student groups that often turn violent. As polls keep showing that most Europeans oppose the war in Ukraine, a conference focusing on the conflict's consequences on the European Union has been held in Rome. The event was attended by Italian army officers, ambassadors, and geopolitical analysts.
On Friday, a conference dubbed "Not to the Escalation of the Conflict in Ukraine, the Peoples of Europe Want Peace" was held in the Italian capital, Rome. Retired Italian army officers, ambassadors, geopolitical analysts, and politicians representing the so-called area of dissent attended the initiative organized by the think tank Center for Studies on Eurasia and the Mediterranean. During the conference, all speakers warned of a dangerous escalation in the Ukraine-Russia war as the US and its NATO allies continue to pump ever more powerful weapons into Ukraine.
Currently, NATO has changed de facto its mandate. NATO is a defensive alliance. And what we are seeing in over the last 2 years and a half is incorrect. It's not appropriate to the mandate and to the treaty itself. That's my advice. Of course, I've been 37 years in the Italian army. It is clear, but it's really unusual to see that NATO has an offensive posture, and this is something that really concerns.
Conference speakers stressed that the EU has been dismantling its economic power and industrial fabric by being forced to sell off its strategic assets to US multinationals and cut ties with Russia following the war in Ukraine. The EU relied on Moscow for up to 40% of its gas supplies until 2022. A recent public opinion survey conducted by the European Council on Foreign Relations across EU countries shows that the majority of Europeans are against raising defense spending, sending fresh arms to Kiev, or sending boots on the ground to Ukraine. In short, most Europeans are against national and continental politicians' war rhetoric, and their distrust of NATO is on the rise. The role played by terrorist groups in the Russia-Ukraine war was also discussed during the conference.
We've seen how Daesh, Al-Qaeda, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham did encourage their combatants to travel to Ukraine, where they could be trained and receive weapons and Ukrainian citizenship if they enlisted in the Ukrainian army. Last year, Germany arrested terrorists who had entered the country on Ukrainian passports.
Meanwhile, the government of Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni is preparing a decree for the country's 10th package of military aid for Ukraine since the war with Russia broke out in February 2022. Max Civili, Rome.
And that is a wrap for this hour's news. Stay with us for more.
diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Ghassan Kanafani and Edward Said remain two of the most influential Palestinian public intellectuals of our time. Much of their reputation derives from their critique of Zionism, colonization and its various forms, Arab despotism and oligarchy. The question is, what would they have said about the current events in Palestine? What would they have said about October 7th and the subsequent ongoing genocide? How would they have positioned this particular historical moment within the world of representation and historical narrative? To answer this question, we will have a look at world media websites and news agencies. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, both Kanafani and Said would have started by reminding us that settler colonial Israel was built on the ruins of the indigenous people of Palestine, whose livelihoods, houses, culture, and land had been systematically destroyed long before October 7, 2023. Men in the Sun, The Land of Sad Oranges, The Question of Palestine, and the Politics of Disposition are but a few of their visionary writings in this regard. Said would have made it absolutely clear that it's time for the international community to understand that the price the fabricated regime of Israel demanded for offering the Palestinians a form of limited administrative autonomy that is less than a Bantustan was a total surrender of any national struggle for agenda, as he did in the morning after. And Kanafani would have reminded us that the Zionist regime genocide denial in Israel and the colonial West is aided by the overall negation of the Palestinians as a people. Genocide, Kanafani would have mentioned, is being perpetrated in Gaza and denied both by the apartheid Israel and the United States regime. Because the mechanism of denial is so forceful in genocidal Israel and among its supporters in the colonial West, it is of utmost importance for the Palestinian people and the peoples of the global South to bang on the walls of the tank so that they can be heard by people on the outside. Both giant intellectuals would have reminded the world how it has been apartheid Israel's policy to erase the distinction between civilian and non-civilian targets through senseless mass killings that have turned all Gaza and now Lebanon into one legitimate military target. De-escalation in military means, by employing all possible killing machines the Zionist regime occupation forces possess. De-escalation is conspicuous in the number of casualties, with each so-called military operation, or rather, with each acceleration of the deliberate and planned genocide, a much larger number of people get killed and wounded, especially children and women. The military operations have become a strategy in themselves in order to solve the Gaza problem. Said would have quoted Colonel Gabby Siboney, who back in 2009 told an academic conference at the Institute for National Security in Tel Aviv University that the Zahiyeh Doctrine, an Israeli euphemism for unbridled destruction of Palestinian infrastructure and often lives, would apply to Gaza and that it is meant to inflict damage that would take ages to recover from. But because, to quote Said, where cruelty and injustice are concerned, hopelessness is submission and therefore is immoral. Therefore, resistance must become the rule. Kanafani's literary texts are, as most of Gazan students have said, our living reality. Gaza, IS, the land of sad oranges, where, in the words of a displaced student from Gaza City, returning to Haifa is being enacted and all that's left is our will to resist or exist. This is why Said argued eloquently that the power to narrate or to block other narratives from forming and emerging is very important to culture and imperialism and constitutes one of the main connections between them. Is this why we are writing our stories? And why is genocide Israel deliberately killing Palestinian academics, intellectuals, and journalists? Undoubtedly, both writers would have publicly raised embarrassing questions, confronted orthodoxy and dogma rather than produce them, would not have been easily co-opted by governments or corporations, and whose raison d'etre would have been to represent all those people and issues that are routinely forgotten or swept under the rug, namely forgotten, slaughtered Gazans, as Said wrote in Representations of the Intellectual. But neither of them would have appeared on Piers Morgan's genocide washing program to answer his tired, racist, cliched questions. Let us close with a quote from another Palestinian intellectual giant, Mahmoud Darwish. This is a verse that offers what we believe is a combination of the best of Kanafani and Said's visionary input. My prison guard looks me in the eye. I can see his fear. Like me, he knows that today's warden is already tomorrow's prisoner.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. The Israeli regime has launched new strikes on Gaza, targeting areas near Kamal Adwan Hospital in the north, leaving scores of Palestinians dead. An earlier strike on the health facility left four doctors dead. The World Health Organization says the attacks came with no prior warnings. Hamas has called for an international committee to investigate Israel's deliberate targeting of hospitals and medical facilities across the Strip, which has been increasing since October of last year. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have journalist and political analyst, Mr. Elijah Magnier, joining us from Brussels. And we also have international coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, Ms. Charlotte Cates, joining us from Tunis.
Is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to the Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the program, to both of our guests. Let's start off with Mr. Magnier in Brussels. So targeting medical facilities has been the Israeli MO since the onset of this genocidal war. Hamas has called for an international committee to investigate Israel's deliberate targeting of hospitals and medical facilities, which most likely will not happen. And also, as we mentioned in the intro, just recently four doctors were killed by Israeli forces at the Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza. Why does the regime continue to target hospitals and medical facilities around 430 days into this massacre?
Thank you for having me. The Israelis are unaccountable. This is why they can do whatever they want. It is not out of nothing that the International Court of Justice and International Criminal Court consider Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as a war criminal for the crime that he is committing against the Palestinians in Gaza and also in the West Bank. There are crimes that are committed there too. So the aim of the Israelis at the moment is to completely ethnic cleanse the north of Gaza and to reconstruct the settlements that were present prior to 2005. This is why they are turning that part in Gaza, in completely non-habitable area, where the people who insisted in remaining in Jabalia, in Beit Hanun, in Beit Lahia, in Ashate, and they insist not to leave, they find no facilities, no hospitals, no schools, no university, nothing at all. And the only possibility for them to continue surviving, according to the Israeli plan, is to migrate from the north to Gaza City, that is still in the north, but in the second part. So that is the Israeli plan, and this is why this is not the first time they target the hospital. They've done that in the last 13 or 14 months of this war.
Charlotte Cates, UNRWA has stated that Israel is only allowing around 30 trucks of life-sustaining aid into Gaza daily, raising urgent alarms about the looming threat of famine in northern Gaza. What is the motive behind what Israel is doing in the north of the Gaza Strip when it had basically already demolished the area in the early stages of this genocidal war?
Yes, the Zionist regime began its genocidal assault on Gaza with its attack on the north of Gaza. But the fact is that the people of the north have refused and rejected the genocide by all means and by all measures. And this is because, you know, the Palestinian people have the memory of al-Nakba. They have the memory of 1967. And so they're unwilling to be displaced from their land. Many, of course, people fled the north of Gaza And they, when they fled to these places that were supposed to be safe, they were bombed there as well. And so they returned to the north of Gaza, whether they were living in their homes, whether they were living in tents, whether they were living in a shelter, in order to protect and defend their land against this Zionist enemy that has no goal other than the destruction of the Palestinian people and the theft and confiscation of their land and resources. And so what we're seeing right now is a genocide in action. It is an attempt to target the civilian population of the north of Gaza. It is an attempt to force them from their homes, to force them from their land, to, I mean, appease the wide-ranging, extremely fascist settler component of the Zionist society, and to pursue the goals of the genocide. I mean, the Zionist regime officials are very clear when they speak openly about their desire to force Palestinians to emigrate, to force Palestinians from their land. And so this is exactly what they're doing in the north of Gaza. They want to attempt to once again, seize Palestinian land. They want to once again try to create, security buffers. This is the kind of, openly to build settlements and to build pipelines and to build, waterfront property, as Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, boasted on the Sea of Gaza. So they're trying to pursue this by all means. And that this war and this slaughter directed against the people of the north of Gaza is one that is being funded, armed, and paid for by the United States and its imperialist allies. So every time we hear a U.S. politician say that they want some kind of a ceasefire, it's very clear that they don't, because they would stop sending Israel billions of dollars in weaponry if that's what they wanted. But instead, they just keep funding and arming the Zionist project to carry out its genocide. And of course, Netanyahu and his cohort want to also wait until Trump is in office, because they feel like they'll have an even freer reign at that point.
Sure.
Not that the Biden administration has done anything to rein in their genocidal assault.
Mr. Magni, a UN committee has criticized the Israeli regime for destroying vital water and sanitation systems, contaminating the environment, inflicting long-term harm on future generations, and using starvation as a weapon of war. UN's Famine Review Committee warned that famine may already be occurring in Gaza. How does Israel's claims of self-defense and fighting the resistance go hand in hand with starving innocent civilians and children in Gaza?
Well, the reason why the International Court of Justice accepted the case against Israel of intent of genocide, because the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, said exactly this at the first beginning of this war, that he's going to cut water, electricity, medic supply, everything on Gaza. And the behavior of the Israelis is so obvious that they are bragging about it on social media. They're showing their crimes against humanity, or war crimes, and confirming their intent of genocide. So we don't hear anything new from the behavior of the Israeli today, because it has been going on obviously in the last 14 months, but it had been going on since 1948, but gradually and more discreetly. But now the Israeli came out and they are saying it because they really don't care. The United States is protecting them at the United Nations, and there is no UN resolution that can condemn them. Even the verdict of the prosecutor of the ICC was rejected by the Americans, and who consider the Israeli official, and in particular Benjamin Netanyahu, as a friend and ally. This is why we see the continuation of what is happening in Gaza. And we also hear that the finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, now is going to annex more territory, 43,000 dunam in the West Bank. Again, that is a violation of international law. So Israel, as an occupation force, doesn't have the right to defend itself. But the Palestinian, according to several United Nations resolutions from the United Nations Security Council, they have the right of self-determination, they have the right of armed defense, and they have the right to claim back their land, but not Israel. So all that is a big lie that was introduced by the West, saying Israel has a right to defend itself, and actually saying Israel can commit all the atrocity and the crimes Israel wants, and again, without impunity.
Ms. Cates, it's not just medical workers that are being targeted by Israel. There are also journalists and even UN peacekeepers. According to data by the Committee to Protect Journalists, the Israeli war on Gaza has killed more journalists over the past year than any other conflict over the past 30 years. UN peacekeepers in Lebanon, if you recall, were fired on by the Israeli regime as well. What can you tell us about that type of conduct by the Israeli regime, where it continues to target journalists, medics, and even UN peacekeepers?
Well, this is a genocidal regime that is carrying out a genocide, and there have been attempts to kind of minimize or normalize the conduct of the Zionist entity throughout this war as if it is unremarkable or normal. It is not. It is genocidal in the most extreme degree. And one of the reasons why there has been such a massive response on the streets by the people of the world, even in the heart of the Imperial Corps, in the capital cities of the countries that are arming and funding and backing and supporting this genocide, that we've seen hundreds of thousands and millions of people taking to the streets, is because of the images and the truth that are being broadcasted to the world by Palestinian journalists. Of course, by and large, access to Gaza is completely cut off by the Zionist regime to international journalists. Palestinian journalists are truly heroes on the front lines, exposing the truth, documenting reality. Professional journalists and citizen journalists taking videos, taking pictures, showing the reality of the Zionist crimes. And so, of course, it is not surprising that a genocidal regime bent on the destruction of the Palestinian people wants specifically to wipe out and target those who are telling the truth and bringing that truth about what's happening in Palestine to the people of the world. I mean, we've seen, we should be very clear, like when the attacks on health workers, the attacks on doctors, the attacks on journalists, the attacks on food aid providers. One of the sectors of Palestinian society that has been exceptionally targeted are municipal workers, repair workers, aid workers, people who work to repair any kind of power systems, people who work to repair hospitals that were damaged, municipal workers, people who were spearheading the distribution of aid in an organized way have been systematically targeted and assassinated by the Zionist regime. These are assassinations. This isn't even part of the sort of generalized carpet bombing that the Zionist regime is carrying out against the Palestinian population as a whole, which is taking place on a daily basis. These are targeted assassinations to wipe out people in those professions that form the material, economic, and social backbone of society. It's an attempt to carry out the genocide by denying those who are injured by their bombs and their missiles, access to healthcare to take care of them and provide so that they can heal. It's an attempt to deny food through carrying out the war crime of starvation and imposed famine. It's an attempt to create social insecurity in society and to promote sort of the use of armed gangs and then say that, oh, well, food aid will be stolen. Well, food aid is only being stolen because that's what's being organized by the occupation forces in their genocidal attack, and because they have systematically assassinated Palestinian after Palestinian, whether they're running a soup kitchen, like we saw last week, a Palestinian who was running a soup kitchen, had been doing so for months, was assassinated in a targeted assassination, to essentially mayors, police officials, and everyone who was a responsible right. aid official in Gaza has been targeted, assassinated by the Zionist regime in order to effectuate the genocide.
Elijah Magni, in its most recent report, Amnesty International has accused Israel of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. Amnesty says that its research over months, quote, has found sufficient basis to conclude that Israel has committed and is continuing to commit genocide against Palestinians. Please break down what this report is saying. And in your opinion, are we seeing Israel plunging further and further into isolation, one more rights group at a time, and one more country at a time, as this massacre continues?
I really don't see Israel isolated in the West and in the rest of the world today. On the contrary, there is a concentration on the ICC warrant against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, now he's become the former defense minister. So everybody is looking at the officials. Now, it is important not only to look at the prime minister and the defense minister. There is a whole chain of politicians, Knesset members, other ministers who called to nuke Gaza, and all the military commanders who are actually involved in the killing, in the crimes against humanity, who have no honor in fighting. And in fact, this is the most immoral and unethical army in the world. These need to be taken to justice around the world, not only the prime minister and the defense minister. So what Amnesty International is saying, ahead of the ICC, is saying, well, yes, there are genocide committed in Gaza. We all know that there are genocide, but to prove the intent is up to the ICC, to the ICJ. And then the ICJ has a problem because it cannot implement these accusations without the United Nations Security Council that need to come up with a verdict. And again, we can be sure that the Americans will block all that. So is that isolating Israel? Of course not, because the Americans are still supplying the Israelis with the weapon they need to continue more crime and genocide against the Palestinians. Germany hasn't stopped in supplying the Israelis with more than 39% of their needs of ammunition. The Americans are the first, yes, but all the other countries are still encouraging, without saying it, the Israeli to continue doing what they are doing in Gaza and in Lebanon. That should not be forgotten, because they have committed also crimes against humanity and war crimes in Lebanon against the civilians, bombing a sovereign country. So at the end of the day, we see the hypocrisy and the double standard of the international community that understood finally that they can no longer hold a high moral ground, and they are really complicit in everything Israel is doing.
Charlotte Cates, staying with the UK-based human rights group Amnesty International, which concluded, basically this conclusion was based on quote-unquote dehumanizing and genocidal statements by Israeli officials, digital images, and witness testimony, and must serve as a wake-up call to the international community. Talking about a wake-up call, over 44,000 have been slaughtered. An entire population has basically been demolished. And according to UN estimates, Gaza will not recover in our lifetime. Are you appalled at how the international community has failed the people of Gaza and has failed to end the suffering of the Palestinians there?
Well, it's clear that there's been a failure across the board on the part of international institutions, in particular, who are charged with preserving peace and security for the people of the world, because it's clear that Palestinians, Arabs, and the people of the region have been systematically excluded from that protection of peace and security. But when we're talking about the imperialist powers like the United States, Britain, France, Canada, Germany, etc., these countries are not, they're not just failing the Palestinians by not acting. They are active partners in the ongoing genocide. They should be, and their leaders should be indicted for war crimes as well, alongside Netanyahu and Gallant. We've already seen Macron stating that France is going to give some kind of immunity to the Zionist officials if they come to France. We've already seen Yoav Gallant is in New York City today. So this is a kind of impunity that's provided by the weaponry and arms of the United States, which is, of course, the greatest threat to humanity in the world today and has been so for decades. And so these states are absolutely and fully complicit, more than complicit, they're active participants in the genocide. We've seen time after time U.S. military officials, you know, going to the Zionist regime to provide direct military advice and participation in the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people. We saw the so-called aid pier, which was actually used as a landing spot to carry out a massacre in Nuseirat camp, and did not, in fact, deliver any aid, and did only deliver occupation soldiers to kill over 200 Palestinians in that massacre. This is full and active participation. And so what we've seen is that the only forces that have stood with the Palestinian people and are living up to their responsibility under international law are the forces of resistance in the region, who have upheld their responsibility to the Palestinian people, but also their responsibility under the Genocide Convention to actually take action to stop a genocide from being carried out in front of their eyes. And in response, what we've seen is yet more war, more so-called terrorist designations, more attacks, and more attempts to destroy all of the forces of resistance in the region, which have been the only forces holding back this onslaught of imperialism, this genocidal assault that is meant to create a sense of terror amongst the entire population of the world, that if you dare to rise up against imperialism, if you dare to rise up against Zionism, you'll be met with slaughter and it will not be stopped. And so it becomes a responsibility for all of us to do everything that we can to not just allow this to continue, to not just feel the sorrow in our screens, but to take action.
Elijah Magnier, you earlier mentioned the issue of the ICC arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and the former war minister, Yoav Gallant. Let's talk more about these warrants. And in your opinion, how can international law be upheld when Israel and its Western supporters won't acknowledge these arrest warrants nor the bodies that have called for them? And what kind of a dangerous precedent is being set here?
Well, all the countries who are signatory of the ICC should implement the warrant against Benjamin Netanyahu and his defense minister, Yoav Gallant. However, we have seen some resistance from several countries who are signatory of the ICC, who said that they may not arrest Benjamin Netanyahu if he touches the ground in their country. And recently, France granted immunity to one of the signatories of the ICC and said that Benjamin Netanyahu can actually visit France without being arrested. Now, there are many ways to go around the law. I remember here in Belgium when Stipe Levny, who was a foreign minister and came to Belgium and had a warrant against her because of the local court, she was asked not to leave the plane, otherwise she would be arrested. So there are ways to twist the law and go around it and not implement it. These laws, as the British told the prosecutor, are not made for the friend of the West, but for the enemies of the West. So I don't think this is going to make a lot of difference, but there is one difference that is a fact. Is many countries will be embarrassed to receive Benjamin Netanyahu, will be attacked by the population, will be indicated as they are receiving a war criminal and they are violating international laws. That will add to the many violations Western leaders have been committing since this war against the Palestinian had begun.
Ms. Cates, very briefly, if you may, in our final question, if no action is being taken here and there's no accountability for Israel's crimes and its violations, won't this just happen again and again? And as we mentioned earlier, even set a precedent for similar massacres to take place in the future. And if that's the case, how can the status quo ever change?
The status quo is only going to change through resistance and confrontation of imperialism and Zionism. It can never be changed by trying to seek accommodation with these forces that have made clear that they are bent only on genocide. There can never be security unless there's an end to and a dismantlement of the Zionist project in the region, which will surely lead to the defeat of imperialism and its hegemony across the board, throughout, not just in Palestine, but throughout the region as well. And as horrible and as awful as the situation is today, as terrible as the human cost has been that has been taken from the Palestinian people by the Zionist regime and by those imperialist powers backing it, it's clear that this is not the end of the road for Palestine. On the contrary, there is no future for everybody but justice and liberation.
Very well. Thanks to my guest, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnea, joining us from Brussels. And thanks to international coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, Miss Charlotte Cates, joining us from Tunis. And also special thanks to you for staying with us on this edition of Spotlight. It's a good night for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs with me, Atar, the host of this program. Shaykh Ahmad Danish is over here in the studio to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you.
So many people ask, is it allowed to read out the translation of the Holy Quran in your own language? I mean, in a language other than the Arabic language, and take the same sawab as you are reading out the Arabic one or not?
Right. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In order to quote a tradition from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, because it answers this question, that what is required when we are being asked to recite the Holy Quran, and God says on a number of occasions that in the Holy Quran itself, that recite the Quran as much as possible for you. So how is a person required to recite the Holy Quran? And the Arabic word for it is tilawa.
Yes.
Right? So what is the true tilawa? Or what is the haqqut tilawa as it has appeared in the traditions?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam was asked about this verse of the Holy Quran, which says that allazina atainahumul kitaba yatlunahu haqqa tilawateh. That is, those whom we have given this holy book, they recite the Holy Quran with the right that the recitation requires. That is, they give they recite it in a proper manner. And so Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam was asked by a sahabi or a companion that what is the right of recitation, or what is the haqqut tilawa that is that a person is required to perform.
All right.
And he says that yuratiluna ayatihi wa yatafahhamuna ma'anihi wa ya'maluna bi ahkamih. And this riwayah goes on that he says that they recite the Holy Quran, they understand its meaning, yatafahhamuna ma'anihi, they understand its meanings, and ya'maluna bi ahkamih. Those obligations that have been given in the Holy Quran, that perform this and don't perform that, they act upon it. That is, they are not just reciting it without understanding. They first understand the do's and don'ts, and then they act upon it. يَعْمَلُونَ
That's right.
بِأَحْكَامِ وَيَرْجُونَ وَعْدَ Those promises that the Holy Quran makes to these people, they are optimistic or they are waiting for those promises. For example, it says regarding the believers that they have a good abode to wait for in the Qiyamah.
Right.
And so these people are optimistic and they wait for those promises to appear in their lives. And يَخْشَوْنَ عَذَابَ They are afraid of the punishment that God tells them about in the Holy Quran. وَيَتَمَثَّلُونَ قِصَصَ وَيَعْتَبِرُونَ أَمْثَالَ وَيَعْتُونَ أَوَامِرَ وَيَجْتَنِبُونَ نَوَاهِ When they listen to the stories of the Holy Quran, they take ibra from that.
Right.
That is, they understand those stories about the prophets, for example, about Prophet Yusuf, right. about Prophet Adam, about Prophet Musa, about Prophet Isa, all these stories about the Salihin. All those stories about those on whom God's azab is going to come.
Okay.
They learn from these stories.
That's right.
Because one of the ways of understanding the religious concept
yes.
is to understand the stories of the, or to understand from the role model of the prophets and the Salihin.
All right.
And these stories have been mentioned in the okay. Holy Quran in
just...
a large number. So just to finish this,
okay.
and then you can ask the next question. وَيَشْتَنِبُونَ نَوَاهِ مَا هُوَ وَاللَّهِ بِحِفْزِ آيَاتِهِ وَسَرْدِ حُرُوفِ It's not just that you have to remember memorize some of the verses and to recite it in front of others. That is not the purpose of sending the Holy Quran. وَتِلَاوَةِ سُورَةِ وَدَرْسِ عَشَارِ وَأَحْمَاسِ حَفِزُ حُرُوفَهُ وَعَضَاءُ حُدُودَ Some people, what they do, they memorize the Quran, but they don't pay respect to the limitations that the Quran puts forward in your life. That is, they don't respect the do's and don'ts of the Holy Quran. So Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam says, وَإِنَّمَا هُوَ تَدَبُّرُ آيَاتِ The concept of recitation and qira'ah is to
contemplate
and do tadabbur
yes.
on the verses of the Holy Quran.
That's
and
right.
يقول الله تعالى كتاب أنزلناه إليك مباركا ليدبروا آياته And so the whole concept, as you mentioned, is to contemplate
That's
on
right.
the gist of the message, to implement it in your life,
right.
and to stay away from the do's and don'ts,
okay.
and to shape your life
That's
in
right.
accordance with the Holy
okay.
Quran. So it's not going to just say, for example, that I want to read the tarjama or the translation of the Holy Quran, and that's going to be it.
Okay.
Yes, translation, if the hadaf or the aim is to implement it in
All
your
right.
life, translation will
yes.
help you. But recitation in itself has a message for you. So the haqqut tilawa has to be that you implement it in your daily lives and with your understanding. If you don't understand
that's
something,
right.
ask those who know and implement
okay.
it in your life.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
So we know that the Holy Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad in Arabic language.
Mm.
And of course, Prophet Muhammad was living in the Arab world. He was from Hejaz. He was from over there in the Arab Peninsula. But now the major question is that, does mere recitation of the Holy Quran in Arabic language, without understanding its meaning, does it have any reward and sawab because it was revealed in Arabic language?
As far as we know that the concept or the basic purpose of recitation is to learn from the Holy Quran. It's the book of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the guidance of human beings. And so mere recitation is not going to serve the purpose of that guidance. But sometimes what happens is that when a person is reading just the words, some of the words stay with him. and he keeps reflecting on those verses later.
Yes.
And so it will have this effect that once the recitation has finished, it stays with that person and he contemplates on that and achieves that purpose from just a simple recitation without tadabbur later.
Yes.
Right? And so this will have, again, served the purpose of the Holy Quran. But even then, just looking at the verses of the Quran has its reward in the traditions.